to Adventure in Putnam on W4CY Radio.
Wake up, America! It's time for the Adventures of Hype Man on W4CY.com, West Palm Beach's number one internet radio station. Here's your host, the Hype Man.
This is the Pipe Man here on the Adventures of Pipe Man W4CY Radio, and I'm here with our next guest. So amazingly excited about for a few reasons. Number one, she is just an incredible human being, and that's the most important part. Number two, she is one of our amazing show hosts, not only on our station here on W4CY Radio, but also as a TV show on Talk4TV, and you can check out the show. We're going to talk more about that, you know, so keep listening, and we'll talk more about the show and how you can listen. And, you know, she's just a great inspiration to many. And then finally, she's from the UK, so I already have a special space in my heart for her because, you know, I love the UK and I love people from the UK. So with no further ado, let's welcome to the show Gina Gardner.
Hello there. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Really excited about it.
Oh, my pleasure. How'd you like that intro? Like, I came up with that the minute I said we were getting started. Like, I never even thought about how to intro you. I just did.
Well, I have to say it was magnificent. Thank you.
There you go. And, you know, unlike with other people, it was all true. Like, everybody else, I kind of lie.
Thanks for that.
So, let's start with this. You know, who is Gina Gardner?
Oh, what an interesting question. I'm many things. I'm a sister and an aunt, a godparent. But I think the major part of my life is around my purpose, which is to help people step into their genuine power, to become the leaders of their own life, and to lead other people with integrity, compassion, and the courage to do what's right. And I think moving into what's going to be a very new arena, we've never needed great leaders, spiritual matriarchs and patriarchs, more than we have at the moment.
No doubt about it. And I have to say, I have to touch on something that you'll probably agree with, but it's just interesting how you initially answered that question because, I mean, here's the thing. You know, people have identity crises or, you know, they don't know certain things about themselves. And I find that's the reason why, because when you ask them who they are, they always talk about labels. You know,
yeah.
I'm a sister, I'm an aunt, I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I'm a this and that. And it's always this label. And I'm like the label Nazi. I can't stand labels because they put you in a box, okay? And we seem to love labels nowadays, especially here in the United States. And a lot of that is because, you know, the insurance companies and big pharma, they're in charge of healthcare instead of actually healthcare professionals. So they put these labels on people so that they can make money off of them. And then people kind of take ownership of those labels. And that really bothers me. It's like my ADD, my anxiety, my depression. Why is it yours? You're never going to get rid of it if it's yours. Like, why would you want to? It's yours. Like, and that's so I am so thrilled that you answered the way you did, especially because you took a very brief moment for that, but then really talked about your purpose. And that is more important.
Isn't it interesting that we're called human beings, but for the most part, I think we're human doings. And, you know, we have labels, and I absolutely agree with you. People hold on to my illness, my tragedy, my whatever, and that becomes their identity. But part of it is, I think, that so many people have a poor sense of who they are when they're not being whatever it is they are. And having the confidence to just say to themselves, I am enough. I am who I am. And actually what I do in life isn't as important as who I am in life. But we're conditioned right from the start. We're conditioned to expect labels and to then own those labels. And very often those labels do us a huge disservice.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And, you know, I got to tell you, you know, we have these identities, but they're not our identities. They're the identities that people gave us. And that I think that's why we're not really sure who we are.
I think that's true. And then there are many people who are being given those identities from a number of different people, and none of them actually fit. And people try and shoehorn themselves into what other people expect them to be. And as a result of that, they get depressed, they get to a place where they're very unhappy because they are not being them. So my company is called Genuinely You, because ultimately, when you can step into being authentically, genuinely you, and not be worried about the conditioning of other people to be what they want you to be or they expect you to be, then you can start to step into your own power. That doesn't mean to say you go out of your way to upset others, but it's about owning who you are, owning your space, and recognizing that, you know, you may want to please other people, but if you please other people and you compromise yourself, you're never going to be happy.
That's true. Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, people, you know, other people are not going to know you as well as you do, and they're not going to care as much as you do, which is why it's so important that we find out who we genuinely are, because at the end of the day, that's who we have, is ourselves.
Well, we're the common denominator, aren't we? We take ourselves into every moment of every day from the time we're conceived until we die. But I'm just going to challenge you, really, because, you know, you say that we know ourselves best. And I've worked with hundreds of people who struggle to know who they are.
True.
Because there's no space in their thinking to explore who they are, because they're so busy being what they think they need to be, because they're trying to fit a mold that somebody else has created, or other people, it might not just be one, have created for them. And that deep dive work in, you know, who are you really, when you strip back all the conditioning and all of that stuff, who are you, and do you actually like yourself and appreciate who you are for the amazing, unique, creative human being that you happen to be?
You know, I couldn't agree more with what you said. And I think, to kind of rephrase what I was saying before, because you're absolutely correct, is, you know, once we know ourselves, we probably know ourselves best. But that is that's the problem, is the reason we don't know ourselves is because of all these labels, because of all these expectations. Like, one of the things I talk about in seminars is society's rules. You know, mm-hmm. We all live by these society's rules. Who made these rules? And do they really apply to us? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, who said you have to do this? Who said you have to act this way? You know, it, like, who came up with these things? These are their rules, not your own rules. And I'm a big believer people have to come up with their own rules.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because they've done a lot of research that looks at how people think. 95% of our thinking is habitual. It doesn't pass our conscious minds, which means we are constantly reacting rather than being proactive. And if you look at those habitual patterns of thinking, the vast majority of those habitual patterns of thinking are something that we brought with us, like baggage from the past.
Yeah.
And very often that's conditioning from our parents or teachers or so on. And that's conditioning from their past and conditioning from their past. So these things, for the most part, people don't question, why do I think this way? So I'll give you a perfect example. If you look at people's attitude to money, you know, have you ever thought, why is it that people who win big lottery prizes very often 2 years later are back to being at the same level financially as they were when they won the money?
Yep.
And, you know, we have such conditioning, and I'm just using money as an example. It's such conditioning around money. You know, money doesn't grow on trees. You've got to work really hard to get money. Money goes through your fingers. You don't deserve. And those conditioning thoughts then impact on our decisions moment by moment by moment. And everything we do, say, think, feel is our choice. And every decision that we make has consequences. Problem is, 95% of our choices aren't actually made consciously.
Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference when people suddenly, or over time, and then it seems to happen suddenly, but it's often taken years to get to the sudden bit, that people recognize that they have choice, they have responsibility, and that the old conditioning isn't a rule. It's not a law of nature. It's man-made, and we can unmake it if we choose.
That's so true. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, people need people like yourself, because sometimes you need that outside voice. And, you know, we may be thinking stuff in our head, or maybe subconsciously, and sometimes you need that outside voice to bring it out. But yeah, I mean, you talked about money, okay? And that totally falls in line with what I'm talking about, society's rules.
Yeah.
Because what are society's rules about success? Okay, we grow up our whole life thinking success is based on money. And that is a society's rule that we need to get rid of, because we also base our happiness on money. We base our sadness on money and every, or decisions that we make. Mm-hmm. It's like people that say, well, I'm not going to get married till I am financially ready. Well, then you'll never get married. Right? Or, you know, I'm not going to have kids till I'm financially ready. I don't care who you are. You're never financially ready to have kids, to be honest.
No.
You know, so, you know, we put such high value and importance of our identity, of everything having to do with our happiness and everything, over something that, again, somebody desired was worth, had value. Like, it's just a piece of paper. Somebody else determined it had value. Or even when it comes to things like gems or gold or diamonds, why are they worth something? Because somebody determined they were. Because otherwise, it would just be another rock.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot in what you say, and I'd like to unpick it, if I may.
Yes.
So many people equate their self-worth with net worth.
Yes.
And if you look at the media, if you look at the fact that we live in a society where celebrity status is hugely important, and young people are led to believe that you have to follow a celebrity and look like them and sound like them and aspire to be like them, whether or not that's something that their parents approve of or not. And people's definition of abundance is very often very narrow. Abundance is financial wealth. But money is just energy. You know, we have three finite things: time, energy, and money. We can use our money to buy other people's time and energy. But ultimately, it's just an exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a lack mentality where you worry about money, and I do appreciate that those who haven't got enough money to pay the rent and to buy food, it's a huge issue. But very often their beliefs about what they deserve and how they deal with money then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you look at the people who are highly successful, they will often be very careful with their money. They won't get into debt unless it's what they describe as a good debt. So it's property or it's investment in themselves. But very often people who haven't got a lot of money will get into debt for stuff and, you know, material things which devalue from the moment that you buy them.
Mm-hmm.
So I would urge anybody who's listening to this, first and foremost, identify wealth in its broadest sense. Your health, your relationships, your sense of happiness and contentment and joy. And that doesn't have to be dependent upon money. But what a lot of people do is, I call it the I'll be happy when, I'll be rich when,
yep,
I'll be fulfilled when. And we create a set of criteria that have to be met in order for us to allow ourselves to feel happy. So I'll use happy as an example. So I'll be happy when I've got the perfect partner. I've got perfect kids who tidy their rooms without being nagged. I've got a perfect dog that never barks and takes itself for a walk. I've got the perfect house, the perfect car, the perfect job, and so on. And as soon as you reach some of these, if indeed they're attainable, you add more criteria. So it, not only is happiness always in the future, but you're always making it more and more difficult to attain. So how about this for a different way of looking at it? I'll be happy every time I get under a hot shower or I have a nice cup of tea or coffee. I'll be happy every time I see a friend or somebody gives me a hug or have a nice meal or I see a beautiful flower or there's a sunset or a sunrise. I'll choose to be happy Because even when things are dark, and I've had many challenges in my life, even on the darkest day, if you choose to, there are things to be happy about. And if you look at the research, they found that people in very poor parts of Africa who had nothing actually did best in the happiness stakes. Why? Because they lived in the moment and they really appreciated life. And I think we could take a leaf out of their book.
No doubt about it. And I have to say, okay, so I had an experience with my youngest daughter several years ago when she was a teenager.
Yep.
And she was one of those people, just like you were describing. She'll be happy when she gets this. She'll be happy when she gets that. She'll be happy this, you know.
Yeah.
And I told her that, you know, happiness does not come from external things. It comes from within.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's so hard for people to understand that concept, you know, but hey, all you have to do is look at a child during Christmas. And you buy them this $1,000 gift and they're playing with the wrapping paper that wrapped it.
Absolutely. And, you know, so many people are looking externally for the answer when they're not prepared to do that inner work. And you talked about it, you know, it's useful to work with somebody like myself. And part of that is because it's much easier for people from the outside to notice the patterns. And one of the things that I am always on the lookout for is patterns of language. You know, people who are always talking about, as you said, their depression or talking about the past and, you know, looking back consistently. Patterns of relationships. You know, somebody's had relationship after relationship that's not worked and blame the other people rather than looking to themselves. And so that's why it ties up with the radical responsibility, because when you take radical responsibility for yourself, nobody can make you unhappy unless you choose to let them. Nobody can make you frustrated or sad. Doesn't mean to say you wouldn't be those things, but if you hand your responsibility, the responsibility for your emotional well-being, to other people, you have to put up with what they give you. And yet what we hear is, he made me cross, she made me frustrated, he made me sad. People are becoming they don't even realize that what they're doing in that way is they're choosing to stay a victim rather than saying to themselves, actually, do you know what? My mood is not going to be dependent upon my partner's mood. I can be happy. If they're angry, they're fed up, I want to support them, but I'm not going to absorb their stuff. I'm going to observe their stuff and be empathetic, but I'm not going to enter into this. But what mostly happens is that because the people are talking or thinking unconsciously, somebody says something in a voice that triggers an old memory of a critical parent or a cross teacher or somebody they didn't like. And it's not the words that trigger people, it's usually the tone of voice, which then triggers them into responding and biting back. That person's then on the receiving end is triggered. And you end up with this dance where everybody's triggering off everybody. And actually, it's not about what's gone on at all. It's just old stuff being ignited. Before you know where you are, there's an argument.
No doubt. And I think it's a lot about what we choose to focus on. And
absolutely.
You know,
yes.
One of my favorite motivational speakers, somebody that you would definitely relate to if you don't know who it is, his name is W. Mitchell. Are you familiar with W. Mitchell?
I've heard a bit of his stuff. He's done quite a few podcasts, hasn't he? I don't know his stuff well, I must say.
Yeah, he's done a lot with Tony Robbins. You should definitely check him out. But there's his philosophy is something I've lived by long before I even heard him say it. But one of his philosophies is, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with it.
And, absolutely.
And I always talk about that. It's like, you know, I've had so many things happen in my life that I can tell you right now, my kids would react totally different than I do. And, you know, it's kind of how the society is kind of right now. It's like, God forbid you should tell somebody to relax. Like, I got into this thing with my daughter the other day. And something happened, and I told her to relax, and she's like, Dad, just because you say to relax, you can't just relax. And I'm like, oh, really? Isn't that what meditation is? Or other things like that? It's like, you have to choose to relax. The problem is you're choosing not to relax because we're taking ownership to these things out there that are going on in the world. And we like to take ownership to negative things. We don't like to take ownership to positive things. We like to take ownership to that we had a traumatic childhood. You know, we don't. How many people do you hear say, oh, it was a great childhood. Everything was great. You know, they always focus on what was bad. Just like in relationships, you know, people get divorced. Nobody ever talks about the good times of the marriage. They only talk about the bad times. So it's, again, what you choose to focus on. Now, what's very interesting, too, W. Mitchell, a couple things about him is, number one, he was he had two accidents. One was out of a plane, and one was in a motorcycle accident. One of them burned 90% of his body. The other one left him a quadriplegic. So, like, for the people out there that have one thing happen to them, there's two major things. And one of the most positive people out there, but one of the things he tells about in his story is when he was, you know, learning life as, or I don't know if he was quadriplegic because I think he could use his arms, but but his arms were kind of burnt too at the same time. Yeah. So, but the nurse was teaching him he has to, you know, do, you know, what he can do, what he can't do. And like, so most people focus on what they can't do when something happens to them, no matter what it is. And his philosophy was, before the accidents, he had 10,000 things he could do. Now, he has 9,000 things that he can do. He doesn't focus on the 1,000 he can't do. He focuses on the 9,000 he still can do.
That's something that really resonates with me. Your listeners won't know that I had a serious ski accident in 1983. And I became a principal of a large school 6 months later. And I ran my school for the most part from a wheelchair. I've learned to walk twice as an adult. It's much more difficult as an adult, I have to tell you, than a child, because the center of gravity is a bit higher and it's further to fall. But I had two failed back surgeries while I was a serving principal, and I was a principal for 20 years, as I say. And within 4 days or 5 days of coming out of hospital, I was back in school. And people would say, you know, you're brave. And for me, the difference was if I stayed at home and somebody hadn't left out a cup and filled the kettle, I couldn't make myself a drink. I could do daytime TV, or I could read, or I could be picked up by taxi, go into school. I had an electric wheelchair in school, and I could run my school very effectively because my brain worked, my mouth patently works, my hands work, and there were people there to do the heavy lifting. And so for me, the focusing on what I could do meant that not only did I run my award-winning school for 20 years, but I also worked for the government as an advisor, and I worked for the National College of Leadership and a whole range of things to bring an income into school. But, and people would look at the fact that I would travel the country and were impressed by that. From my point of view, I just did it because that's what I did. But I had a really, really powerful lesson. So 2004, I left being a principal, headship, and I didn't know who I was. Back to the label, if I'm not being a principal, then who the hell am I? And I felt as if I was back to that 14-year-old, you know, eczema-ridden, overweight teenager that I'd been at the age of 14. And I thought, what am I going to do now? And so I looked at my skill set. I'd got all of this experience. I'd trained hundreds of people, and you know, leadership was my thing, and the disability was the gift, because I couldn't get into the classrooms, so I had to find a way of empowering people that didn't require me standing behind them saying, do it like this, and you haven't done that right. So I did a research project, and I started to work with corporates, having written a couple of books based on the research project and my experience. And I decided to do some more studying. So I went and I became an NLP master practitioner and an NLP coach. I was already a qualified coach, but I did more qualifications. And I'd done all of the qualifications with the same company. So I decided to go and see as many people using NLP as I could. And Tony Robbins was coming to London, and he went to the Excel Centre, and I decided to attend his UPW, Unleash the Power Within. Many of your listeners will be familiar with that. And on the first, I have to say, I was a bit cynical. I thought, big American, lots of hype, very noisy. I wonder how much substance there is. So I arrived at the Excel Centre, and the first thing, I was gobsmacked because there were 10,000 people on the course. And I'd never seen a course with more than a few hundred, to be quite honest. And during the first morning, he talked about a programme that he was running in California. And I just dismissed it, thinking, how would I get there and travel there? I didn't have an electric travel chair as I do now, because although I can walk short distances, I still use a wheelchair to go into town or to go on holiday. I've only got a manual chair. I'd never manage, so I dismissed it. That evening, we did the fire walk. And for those who are unfamiliar, that's you walk over hot coals in bare feet, and if you're in the right mindset, you don't get burned. And I was determined to do it. Now, by this time, I'd had an internal spinal stimulator fitted and I could walk a few steps. So with somebody helping me each side, I managed to do the fire walk and I was absolutely thrilled. To use a very local colloquialism, I was chuffed to little mint balls, really pleased. Sat back down in my wheelchair and the guy behind me was a double amputee, no legs below the knee. He tipped himself up onto his hands and he walked those hot coals on his hands. And I thought, if he can do that, no matter what I've done in the past, I'm self-limiting. I booked my flight, I booked my ticket, I went to California, did the course, did all of his programs and became a senior leader. I am so grateful to that man. I have no idea who he is, but he made a fundamental difference, because what he taught me is we all self-limit. And even if you think you're doing the most amazing things, you're still self-limiting. So my challenge to everybody who's listening is have a look at your beliefs and what are the things that are keeping you playing small, because they will be there. And step out of your comfort zone. It may feel uncomfortable, but if you think about it being unfamiliar rather than uncomfortable, the more you do it, the easier it'll get.
So true. And you know, you've hit a big thing of mine is about limiting beliefs, because you know, and it's funny, you talked about the firewalk. I did the firewalk. I was married at the time. P.S. My first wife, she got burned.
Right. There was something in the news. I was a senior leader on the London one. This is 2 or 3 years ago. And they were very, very strict about no mobile phones. If you're doing the firewalk, you've got to be in the moment. You've got to be focused. And the people who were running it, and I was one of those who was helping, were really, really strict. If the people weren't in the right mindset, they were sent to the back of the queue to get themselves there. 5 or 6 weeks later, they had a UPW in Florida, and it hit the international news because many people were burnt. And when you looked at the footage of it, they were all on their phone. They were filming themselves doing the firewalk. So instead of being in the moment and focusing on what they were doing, they were more focusing about showing other people on their phones. And as a result, they got burnt.
Yeah, it's amazing how we have this technology that can record all our experiences, and yet people have less experiences than they've ever had because they're not experiencing anything. They're just filming and shooting everything. You know, I see it when I go to concerts and festivals. It's like there's so many people out in the crowd literally watching the concert through their phone because they're filming it, that they'll probably never watch that video ever again. And they weren't there to experience it because they're looking through their phone instead of just living it.
Isn't it sad? You think of all of those missed experiences, because the only thing we've ever got, any of us, is this moment. The past is gone. The only thing you can do is learn from it. The future may not happen. I mean, I was given a really salutary lesson in 2009. I was sitting at home and I was working on another book, and I got a phone call from my sister to say that she'd got the dreadful news that our little brother, he was 49 at the time, he'd been doing a last practice to the London Brighton cycle race, paradoxically for the British Heart Foundation, and he suddenly collapsed and just died. And you know, for me, it's always, what can I take out of this that is positive? And on the surface of it, nothing. He was a beloved brother. He was taken before his time. And it turned out to be a condition that, had he known about it, could have been easily treated, but it's the most common reason for sudden death in men. And what I chose to take out of it was live every day as if it's your last. You know, the relationships are what's important. You know, every relationship, whether it's personal or professional, is a reflection of the relationship you have with you. So make the relationship with you a great one. Your health is precious. You know, have you had those health checks? Do you eat properly? Do you hydrate? Do you exercise? Are you taking drink or drugs to anesthetize yourself? And, you know, recognize that why you're on this earth is important. Who you are, not what you've got, is so important.
You know, you hit something that's a huge thing of mine. I've my whole life lived life to the fullest every day. And my philosophy has always been, even since I'm young, is that I don't want to feel that one day like I die or I'm incapacitated or what have you, and I couldn't do stuff because I was waiting for the right time to do it. Or
yeah.
And it's funny because I just had this conversation, that same youngest daughter, the other day, because interestingly enough, we are going next weekend skiing and snowboarding. And
brilliant.
And so basically what happened was, it's Hanukkah, and so I'm treating two of my daughters and my daughter's boyfriend, and I'm paying for the lodging, I'm paying for the ski lift, I'm paying for the lessons, I'm paying for everything. And basically I said, all you have to worry about is the clothes you need and food. And so she did something that I would have never done in my life, and it led to a conversation, and she just started like kind of panicking about it, you know, because they're not in a great financial situation because of COVID. And, you know, so many people, I'm all about the solution, not the problem. People like to focus mm-hmm. on the problem. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that's what she was doing, is like, I can't afford this, this, and this. And then the thing that came to my head, and this part I hope she doesn't listen to, she probably won't, but is I thought about, like, last week, she was just at we were at Green Market, and she bought herself a piece of jewelry, which leads me to, you know, people spend money on what they want to spend money on, and they always find the money for the things they truly want to do. But I also am totally, totally against what I call poverty thinking, you know.
Well, it leads to more poverty.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
but you've got to be really clear, haven't you? Because many people will misinterpret what I think you're talking about, and certainly what I'm talking about,
yeah.
Which is, if I'm not in a poverty mindset, if I want it, I'll have it, yeah. Even if I get into big debt.
Yeah, you got to manifest. And I mean, that poverty thinking just manifests everything you don't want.
Of course it does. Yeah.
You know, so she started going through that whole thing, and I didn't do what I normally do, because normally what I would do is I might feel, and it's enabling, but I might feel bad, and I'm like, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. And I mm-hmm. decided to shut my mouth and just like get off the phone after we were done talking, and, you know, not make the offer. Okay. And
well done.
Yeah.
I think because otherwise you're colluding.
Oh, yeah.
You?
Yeah, well, it took 54 years to figure that out. But so
some never do.
So we were having this conversation, and I said to her, I'm like, see, I just, and she's talking about it, and she's like talking about how she really wants to go, but, you know, and you know, and so I was like, yeah, see, I've never been like that. Like, I am the type of person my whole life that I've lived life to the fullest, and I figure out a way to pay for it later, you know, and I don't think about, oh my God, I have to wait to the perfect time. So here's the thing. She says to me, and again, you know, what we decide to own. Well, me and my boyfriend, we both don't think like that, okay? And I said to her, I'm like, you know, you're going to be my age. I'm like, I said, I'm my age, and you know, I could, and I've always lived this, I could die right now and not feel any regret that I missed out on anything because I did mm-hmm. stuff. I said, at your age, you know, you shouldn't be thinking that way, because at the end of the day, you know, you're going to wake up and be my age, and you miss all these opportunities in life because you weren't perfectly prepared for it, or whatever the reason, or the poverty thinking, or what have you. And I'm like, but here's what has always happened to me, is that whenever I couldn't afford to do something, and I spent the money to do it anyway, somehow something always happened that I got the money back. And I looked back, and it all worked out just fine. And I didn't have any, and because I'm not about worry at all. And, you know, people like her are about worry. And that's another discussion we'll talk about. But, you know, she just kept going on about, you know, and stressing out. And I finally said to her, I'm like, Rachel, okay, you're stressing out about something that's supposed to be fun. Why are you stressing? If you don't want to go, just don't go. But why are you stressing out about something that's going to be fun? You know, and like she said, if I do, and then all I'll be doing is worry about blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know, you can't do that. Why, you know, just, and this is what people do all of the time. And that's why they don't find the solutions, because they're so focused on the problem, on worry and this and that. So to speed up the story, what ends up happening? We hang up and she calls me later that afternoon. We talked about it. We decided we're going. I found I could pick up some extra shifts and we'll figure it out. And see, me, and what she didn't understand about me is I'm thinking to myself, listen, I'm paying for just about everything. All you need to worry about is this. And I'm thinking in my mind that whatever they have to worry about is money they would spend anyway if they didn't go. And that's
my
point.
Well, they're going to have to eat, aren't they? Whatever they do, they're going to have to eat.
Exactly. So that's my point. It's like people miss out on opportunities and end up in the same situation, spending the same amount of money. Guaranteed, if she didn't go, she would spend the same amount of money as if she did.
Probably more, because she would be then commiserating with herself because she didn't get to go.
Yep.
And so, let's treat ourselves to this, that, or the other. And it's interesting, isn't it, how many people put themselves into the victim. You know, when you are focusing on, I can't do this, this is the problem, isn't it a shame, poor me, you're not well resourced. Whereas if you look for the solution, the doors of possibility open up. And I'm not talking about we need to make the definition between being aware of the opportunity and taking action that will make it happen, and just throwing caution to the wind and, you know, I'm going to spend and spend and spend and spend because that way I'm not in a negative mentality. This is about taking radical responsibility for yourself, your life, your finances. And if you want to do something, then the only person who can really make it happen is you.
Absolutely. 100%. So we're kind of running out of time. We talked about how long it was going to be. Can you believe we're almost at 50? Can you believe we're almost at 50 minutes already?
Goodness me. You make it very easy, Dee. Very easy to talk.
See that? And, you know, people come to me about having a radio show and they're like, oh my God, 50 minutes. They act like it's 50 years, you know? And, yes. And I'm like, once you do it, you're going to see 50 minutes is like a blink of an eye.
It certainly is.
So let's do this. Let's take the time right now. Let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about how people can reach out to you and contact you and get your services and all that good stuff.
So if they want to email me, it's Gina, G-I-N-A, at genuinely-you.com. And then the word you.com, or go on to genuinely-you.com as the website. If you're interested in leadership, then enlightenedleadership.co. I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. Please, please subscribe to the Genuinely You YouTube channel. I'm on Tumblr, lots of places. But the easiest way, email me, Gina@genuinely-you.com.
Okay, and so let's talk about your show for a second. You have a show right here on W4CY Radio called Leadership for Life. It's also broadcast as a TV show on our TV station, Talk 4 TV. So tell everybody about that show and why they should watch this show and or listen to it.
Well, for me, as I said to you, we are the common denominators within our lives. And I think it makes sense for us to become the leader in our own life. So, you know, leadership is something that people often only associate with business or corporates or the army or whatever. For me, you becoming the leader in your life, you taking control of your life, not being controlling, that's something quite different, but taking responsibility for your life, whether that's your personal life, your professional life, makes sense. And so when I set up this show, it was really to help people get some insights into some simple principles and strategies that would help them, and to engage guests who could also add a different dimension. So the show has a theme each time. And if my guest is predominantly about business, then I'll often look at the personal version of that theme, or vice versa. So it's about how do you get the best out of life as you as a person, you as the professional, because actually you're the same person. Doesn't actually matter whether it's work or home. So love people to join me. We have a whole range of brilliant guests booked up, all who are experts in their field or have a particularly motivating story or something to offer. So 1 o'clock on a Thursday, Eastern Time. Love it if people would join me.
And they definitely should join you, because you have a great show for sure. That's why I even have you here on my show, because you're definitely a role model for many, for sure. And a role model for, you know, again, going back to what I said, W. Mitchell's philosophy, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with it. And that's something I talk about all the time. It's like, it's your outlook on things. Again, to these discussions, too, with the younger generation that doesn't necessarily understand it the way we did. Like, you know, you try to portray that, hey, you know, it's all what you make of it. You know, it's all what you do. It's all how you look at things. And all you have to do is look at the science. And the science, to me, is people like yourself, people out there who have had tremendous amounts of things happen that to most people would be negative or debilitating or what have you, and that they're always the ones that rise to the top.
I think there, even in the most difficult situations, there's a lesson or a gift if you look hard enough. And if you do that, then, you know, the world, the quality of your world changes.
And you can't change what happened, which is why... Yeah. You can't focus on what happens. You have focus on what you do with it, you know, because that's what you do have control over. And I try to teach that to people all the time. Like, don't stop trying to control the things you can't control. Control your reaction, because that you have full control over.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So is there anything else you want the listeners to know that we haven't covered that they need to know about Gina Gardner?
I have a huge mission. My mission is to positively impact on 1 million people in the next 5 years through the development of enlightened leadership. I think we're moving into a very different world where it's so important that we recognize that we are connected, and that good leadership should come with integrity, compassion, and the courage to do what's right. And it doesn't matter whether you're a parent and you're leading in your family, whether you're in a relationship and that you are equal leader with your partner, whether you're in a business, whether that's a one-man band, a small business, or a big corporate business. I think we have to look to ourselves, how we are operating as individuals, as collectives, and how we are going to make a difference. Because if we don't, the legacy that we are leaving our children and grandchildren is something which is very sad.
It's true. Very true. And, you know, I have to say that we're going to have to do this a lot more, because you are definitely an inspiration to many. And I think our leaders of the world right now might need to take, you know, like subscribe to some of your services, because...
I think so. The thing is, with anybody, is you've got to be ready to do the deep dive work on yourself.
Well, that's
because when
true.
You do that, everything else falls into place.
Well, that's true, because if you're not ready, you're not going to do what it takes anyway.
Yeah. But if you are, then real magic happens.
There you go. And magic can happen no matter what's going on. Even in the times, people, that we're living right now, I want you to look back in history. 1918 pandemic. Same scenario we have now was followed by the Roaring 20s. So there is a light beyond the darkness that you may be in right now. Focus on the light, not the darkness.
Become the light.
Yes.
For other people.
Absolutely. And that is exactly who you are, Gina. And you are the light for other people, and you are a true leader. And thank you for being on The Adventures of Pipe Man.
It's my absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Adventures of Pipe Man on W4CY Radio.